The Haynes Borough will re-advertise for the Community and Economic Development Coordinator position, and the new ferries for the Lynn Canal will be built in Ketchikan. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Mara Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The Haynes Borough will re-advertise the new Community and Economic Development Coordinator position after the selected candidate turned down the job. Darcy Colbeck was selected by a hiring committee for the position and approved by the Assembly last meeting, but he confirmed over the weekend he wasn't taking the job. Colbeck worked as the executive assistant with the borough recently, working on special projects, grants, and other issues. Last year, he suggested a change in his job to an economic development coordinator. That suggestion was taken up by the Assembly, but the group decided it wanted to wait until a new manager was hired before making the decision. Then, the creation of the Community and Economic Development Coordinator was included in the FY15 budget. That budget included eliminating Colbeck's executive assistant position. Colbeck was one of three applicants for the position. Colbeck said he turned down the job because of the negative attention he's received that comes with public service in Haynes. He wrote in a statement that he is proud of the work he did with the borough, including securing grant funding for things like biomass projects and the Picture Point improvements. But he said he was reluctant to, quote, further subject myself and my family to the personal attacks that come with being a public figure in Haynes. Manager Dave Sosa said the borough intended to re-advertise the position and expand the search for applicants. The Ketchikan Shipyard will build two new ferries for the state of Alaska over the next few years, ferries that are slated to serve the Lynn Canal. The deal was announced over the weekend during a barbecue at the shipyard's huge enclosed ship construction area. KRBD's Lila Carey attended and has this report.
Good afternoon, Ketchikan. How's everybody doing today?
Hundreds of local residents showed up for the hastily arranged barbecue celebration at Vigor, Alaska's shipyard. The agreement between Vigor and the state of Alaska had been finalized just a few days before. Governor Sean Parnell was all smiles as he announced the terms of the deal.
The construction contract to build both ferries in Ketchikan at $101.5 million. The economic and job benefits are going to be felt throughout the community, throughout the region, and throughout the state.
The ferries will be the first Alaska Marine Highway System vessels built in Alaska. And Parnell says that when they're completed, they also will be the largest vessels ever built in the state.
The ferries will be 280 feet long, seat up to 300 passengers, and carry 53 standard vehicles. Each ferry will feature bow and stern doors for quicker loading and unloading, fully enclosed car decks, and controllable pitch propellers to maximize maneuverability and efficiency. A modified hull design will greatly improve traveler comfort during rough weather, like today.
Frank Foti is CEO of Vigor Industrial, which operates the Ketchikan Shipyard along with other shipyards on the West Coast. He says this contract will let Ketchikan disprove a few myths about Alaska.
You can't build anything here. It's too far. It's too hard to get things here. There's not enough workers here. Workers aren't qualified here. Wrong, wrong, and wrong. Because what we're going to do is we're going to make some ferries, and on the side of them, it's going to say,
Made in Alaska!
Vigor Industrial bought out Alaska Ship and Dry Dock a few years ago to operate the shipyard. Randy Johnson is a former ASD owner who stayed on with Vigor Alaska. Johnson praised the governor for his tough negotiating skills and for his commitment to building the ferries in Ketchikan. But Johnson saved his biggest praise for shipyard employees.
To all the men and women that I had the pleasure to work with building this shipyard, you deserve this day. It wasn't easy, you all know that, and I've got tremendous respect for all of you. It's just a tremendous opportunity, and I know that these ships that are going to be built in this facility are going to make everyone in this room proud. And I'm just happy I was able to have a part in it. So thank you all. Thank you, Frank.
Following the speeches, Parnell and Vigor Alaska President Adam Beck signed the agreement, with shipyard employees crowded behind to witness the event. Both of the new vessels will be day boats to serve the Lynn Canal route between Juneau, Haynes, and Skagway. Beck says the design is somewhat different from the original proposal, which had called for an open car deck.
I think the public, rightfully so, was very much interested in a closed car deck, given the where it was going to operate, and the department listened to the public input, and so now we're building fully enclosed car deck with a drive-through.
Despite that addition, value engineering elsewhere kept the contract under the state's $120 million limit. Beck says the ships will be no-frills vessels that will get the job done.
It's going to be day boats that are going to carry people and cars and get you from point A to point B, and I think that's what the state needs, and that's what will work with the program, and we'll be able to build them within budget.
The multi-million dollar ferry contract calls for delivery of the two vessels by 2018. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Saturday's announcement wasn't unexpected and came less than 2 days after a draft environmental document on the Juneau Access Road Project was released. That document maintains the state preference to use these new ferries as a way to connect Skagway Haines and a proposed new ferry terminal in Katsahin. The road would then connect the Upper Lynn Canal with Juneau. The shipyard has been working with the state on designing the two day boats, and through that agreement, first dibs on the contract to build the vessels. A bill that will exempt tribes from taxation on social welfare programs has made its way through Congress and is awaiting the president's signature. The bill was introduced in response to the Internal Revenue Service's increased auditing of tribes over the last few years and is part of a national initiative to give tribes the same tax status as local and state governments. KTOO's Jennifer Canfield has more.
John Dossett, an attorney for the National Congress of American Indians, says this whole thing started in 2005 when the IRS Tax-Exempt and Government Entities Division went to the National Indian Gaming Commission and got a list of its tribal members.
They started at the top with the most wealthy tribes, and they started auditing them in around 2005. And then they started working their way down the list.
While some of the larger tribes complained about the audits, it wasn't until smaller, less wealthy tribes started getting audited that the NCAI started looking into the issue. Dossett notes one of the most egregious examples was when the IRS went after the Oglala Sioux tribe. The IRS expected families to claim charity, such as $200 vouchers to buy their children new school clothes, as income on their individual tax forms.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely off the Richter scale, ridiculous. And then when they started doing that kind of stuff, that's when it just lit the tribes up.
To be clear, the IRS was targeting tribal general funds. So if a tribe was operating a social welfare program with its own money, the IRS wanted those benefits to be taxed. If a tribe was operating a program funded by the federal government, that was okay. In Alaska, native interests in oil, timber, or other business investments are most often held by the corporations. In turn, most tribes have little, if any, general funds and instead operate most of their services with federal funding. Still, Dossett brought a warning to last year's Alaska Federation of Natives convention in Fairbanks. He told delegates that the same IRS division that had been under fire for targeting Tea Party and conservative groups was also targeting tribes. While the IRS does not disclose who it audits, there haven't been any publicized reports of Alaska tribes subjected to the targeted audits. Despite that, tribes like the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes have become involved in the NCAI's Intertribal Organization Tax Initiative, which seeks to put Alaska Native and American Indian tribes on a level playing field with local and state governments.
We need to be one to be on par with state and local governments.
That's Will Micklin, a vice president with Tlingit and Haida.
And two, we need access to capital to monetize tax credits that would allow us to operate those economic ventures that would generate those general funds or enterprise funds that we could use for our own purposes to supplement the decreasing federal funding.
Micklin is also the executive director of the California Association of Tribal Governments. He says numerous tribes in California were subjected to the IRS audits.
It was burdensome, it was unproductive, and it was resulting in hardship both on the tribes as well as the tribal citizens.
In June, the IRS issued formal instructions on how to deal with tribal welfare programs. It essentially gave tribes the benefit of the general welfare doctrine, which allows federal, state, and local governments to operate tax-exempt social programs. Despite the change in IRS regulation, the Tribal General Welfare Exclusion Act of 2013 passed both the House and the Senate last week with strong bipartisan support and numerous co-sponsors, including all of Alaska's congressional delegation. Dossett says key elements of the legislation include the temporary suspension of the targeted audits and a mandate for IRS field officers to receive training in federal Indian law. But he hopes that training includes tribal representatives.
That's one of the things we're really advocating for, that it isn't just like, you know, a bunch of IRS agents going in a room and talking to themselves, but that, you know, that the tribes are involved and they bring in key people who know what's going on, and that there's a lot more really consultation between the IRS so that they can better understand what the tribes are doing.
The bill also establishes a tribal advisory committee within the Treasury that will advise the secretary on Indian tax policy and authorizes the secretary to waive any penalties or interest imposed on tribal governments or members. The bill allows tribes to file claims for any taxes or fines imposed on its social programs in the last 3 years, and directs the secretary to resolve any ambiguities in the act in favor of tribal governments. Another bill that NCAI advocated for through its initiative, the Tribal Tax and Investment Reform Act of 2013, would have allowed tribes to issue tax-exempt bonds for community infrastructure. The bill is in a House committee and has no companion bill in the Senate. With Congress in recess until November, it's unlikely to advance. In Juneau, I'm Jennifer Canfield.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Special thanks to Lila Carey for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.